7, Stan Phillips.
Good morning, Met fans, and happy 2 for Tuesday. Yes, today we can actually say it is a 2 for Tuesday, as Mother Nature brought us bad weather last night, and the Mets, smart thing. Now, I don't know if Steve Cohen had anything to do with this, but canceling the game about 4 hours in advance was a good thing. For once, fans didn't have to trek out to the ballpark and then turn around after paying for parking, concessions, etc. They just called the game early. Even though it wasn't raining at the time, but the forecast was bad. So hats off to Met management, whoever called the game, smart move, way to go. But as I said, today is now 2 for Tuesday. Yes, we have 2 games for the price of 1, old school. Now I remember back in the day, those twilight doubleheaders at Old Shea used to start at 5:05. Well, today, the first game will begin at 3:10. They're starting a little bit earlier, and I think it's probably due to the fact that games just play out longer now. So we're going to have a little mid-afternoon baseball and baseball through the night in New York Metland today. A doubleheader against one of the best teams in baseball, San Francisco Giants. Yes, we've played the Nationals. Yes, we've played the Diamondbacks. I'm not going to say the Phillies, but 2 of the 3 teams we played were really lower echelon teams, and the Phillies are having their struggles too. So this will be a real test today with the Giants coming in. Now, like I said, the first game will begin at 3:10 with game 2 following right after. Tyler McGill, my main man Tyler, will pitch in his first game, and Max Scherzer will pitch in the second. Alex Cobb will start the first game for San Francisco, followed by Logan Webb in the nightcap. Should be a dandy. If you can make it out there, please. You're not going to see a doubleheader matchup better than this one. So hopefully the games play out the way they look like on paper. And the Mets win, of course. Now, the Mets completed a series against the Arizona Diamondbacks and now face the team that has the lowest combined ERA in the majors. New York's not too far off, as their 1.07 starter ERA is the best in the bigs. The Giants are off to a hot start this season, owning a 7-2 record to be tied for first in the NL West. Meanwhile, the Mets lead the way in the East with a 7-3 record themselves. So this will surely be a good matchup. And we didn't get to see it last night, but we get 2 for the price of 1 today, and that's going to make it all the worthwhile. Good day. Good day. Now, there are some things to watch in this whole Giant Mets series. Like Max Scherzer's first home start as a Met. Yes, Max's first 2 starts as a Met came on the road, with the first against the Nationals in Washington and the second against the Phillies in Philadelphia. Now, when his first start, Scherzer was intentionally holding back while getting over a minor hamstring issue. And that was evident because he didn't induce a single swing and miss on his fastball. After the game, manager Buck Showalter said Scherzer was operating with a governor. Scherzer looked more like himself against the Phillies, but was uncharacteristically wild in the first inning and got his pitch count up and resulted in him lasting only 5.0 innings. After the start, Scherzer said getting used to his now healthy hamstring took a while to adjust to. So, we go to Tuesday's doubleheader. Scherzer should be fully healthy and could benefit from the extra adrenaline that comes with pitching at Citi Field as a Met for the first time. And he will go in game 2. So we are going to see Max in prime time tonight. It should be a good watch. Now, also, we can look out for the potential return of Mark Canha and Brandon Nimmo. Canha and Nimmo have both missed the last 3 games after testing positive for COVID-19 while being asymptomatic. When it comes to their potential returns, vaccinated players are eligible to be activated as soon as they've been deemed to no longer be infectious and are cleared by doctors. Unvaccinated players, I should say, have to test negative twice before being cleared to return. Kanha is vaccinated and boosted, while Nimmo has not said whether or not he is vaccinated. Save for Saturday's two-run showing, the Mets offense has been fine without Kanha and Nimmo, scoring 10 runs on Friday and 5 runs on Sunday. But getting back two of their best on-base guys will be a boon when it happens. And these guys really are your prototypical get-on-base type of guys. They have good eyes at the plate, wear down pitchers, and are able to generate big innings for a team just by getting on base by hook or by crook. Now, let's get to the nitty-gritty. This is going to be a strength versus strength matchup. The Mets starting rotation has put up historic numbers over the first 10 games of the season, with the lowest ERA since the earned run became an officially tracked stat in 1913. Now, San Francisco's starting rotation hasn't been quite that good, but it is formidable. Alex Cobb, Logan Webb, Carlos Rodon are scheduled to start the first three games of the series, with Anthony DeSclafani scheduled to go in the fourth game. New York will counter with McGill, Scherzer, Chris Bassett, and Carlos Carrasco. Overall, the Giants, with strong relief work to go along with their very good rotation, have given up just 20 runs a season as they raced out to a 7-2 record as they battle the Los Angeles Dodgers for supremacy in the NL West. On the offensive side of things, Jock Peterson is one of the only Giants really off to a hot start. But who's off to a hot start for our Metropolitans? Well, the Polar Bear. We are seeing a great display of Polar Bear power, and he is off to a sizzling start to the season power-wise with 3 homers, 3 doubles, and a league-leading 14 RBIs. Alonso hasn't gotten on a base a ton, as evidenced by his 231, 289, 538 triple slash line, but it seems just like a matter of time before he starts firing on all cylinders. Against the Giants this week, with temperatures being the high 40s to low 50s, Alonso's ability to cut through the elements, as he did on Saturday when he hit an absolute missile of a home run to left center against the Arizona Diamondbacks, could be huge for the Mets. Now, how about Seth Lugo and the rest of the bullpen? The one major concern in the Mets' first 10 games has been the bullpen, which coughed up two eighth-inning leads last week and then made an 8-1 lead against the Phillies nearly disappear before holding up. Edwin Diaz, Drew Smith, and Chasen Shreve have been stellar. Drew Smith is really throwing hard and good, and Diaz has been in the groove. And let's not forget Adam Ottavino. He's been solid while dancing in and out of some jams. But other than that, things have been a little bit shaky. Joey Rodriguez has not pitched well, and I wasn't really that fond of getting Joey Rodriguez in the trade. And Trevor May missed some time with a minor tricep issue. And Sean Reed Foley could be ticketed for AAA Syracuse when the rosters revert back to 26. But the main worry has been Lugo, who has not looked like himself. And I'll admit, I'm a big Seth Lugo fan. You guys know that. And it is a little disconcerting for me. Now, in 4.1 innings over 5 appearances, Lugo has allowed 4 runs on 5 hits while walking 3 and striking out 7. If Lugo can retain his form, the Mets should be in solid shape. If not, they'll likely need to bring in reinforcements sooner than later to help strengthen their winning bridge to Diaz. Now, one of the injury concerns for the Metropolitans is Taijuan Walker. He has been on the IL since April 12th due to bursitis in his right shoulder, and he will soon take a big step toward his return to the Mets. Walker was placed on the IL after leaving his first start of the season on April 11th after just 2.0 innings due to the shoulder issue, and he is eligible to be activated on April 22nd. However, he needs to build up his innings first. Showalter said after Sunday's game that Walker, who threw a bullpen session without issue earlier in the day, would probably make more than one rehab start in order to get his volume up before returning. According to Anthony DeComo of MLB.com, Walker will make a rehab start this Wednesday in extended spring training. Showalter indicated on Sunday that Walker's second rehab start, if needed, would possibly come with the High A Brooklyn Cyclones. In addition to leaving his first start of the regular season early, Walker also left his final spring training start after just 1.0 innings due to a knee issue. So it makes sense for Walker to build up his innings and stamina before returning. Now, David Peterson has been filling in for Walker. The lefty tossed 4.0 strong innings in relief of Walker on April 11th and fired 4.1 scoreless innings. And he's been a big help, a big boon in filling that void of Walker. Now, Peterson's spot in the rotation is set to come up again on April 22nd, so we shall see what transpires there. Now, I didn't get a chance at all to talk about Buck Showalter's heads-up loophole to end the peel play against the Diamondbacks. It was mastery. I didn't even realize what was going on. But Buck Showalter flashed J.D. Davis a thumbs-up Sunday for making a heads-up play that the Mets went over in spring training. The Diamondbacks wanted to appeal whether Dominic Smith left early from third base on a sacrifice fly in the sixth inning of the Mets' 5-0 victory at Citi Field. Davis was on first base and took off for second as Arizona reliever Oliver Perez stepped off the rubber, confusing the former Mets lefty with a steal of second to negate the appeal play at third. It's something that the Mets talked about in spring training, said Showalter. We go over a couple of rules every day. We couldn't get the phone call quite in time to make sure we hadn't left early. So it's something we talked about. I gave the sign to third base coach Joey Cora, and we took off from first base so we could get the run. I'll trade the out for the run every time. By rule, the appeal was negated once Perez took a step towards second base. But the 21-year-old veteran's indecision and subsequent throw to third allowed Davis to swipe the bag safely. One of the best ones and one of the easiest ones ever, Davis said, adding he was alerted from the dugout by backup catcher Tomas Nito. Buck takes great pride in having his players know the rules, and one of the loopholes in that rule, we talked about that in spring training if the opportunity came up. If there was an appeal process and a guy on first base, that he would take off early as a way to distract the pitcher from continuing his appeal. Right when Perez came set and stepped off, I took off, and sure enough, he took the bait. We got the appeal canceled and kept the run. That's all Buck right there. And that was amazing. You really have to know your baseball, and you got to give tip your hat to Buck Showalter on that one. That is amazing that he pulled that off. And there's another reason why I'm very confident the Mets are going to do a lot better this year under Buck's leadership. And like I said, we need the leadership of Nimmo and Canha. So again, COVID-19 is giving us a little twist and turn here, and even in the 2022 season. So hopefully he'll be ready to go, both of those guys, and it should be fun. Looking forward to this series against the Giants. Now, as always, we take time out to celebrate Mets birthdays and transactions on this date. This date in 1960, Frankie Sweet Music Viola was born. One of the better pitchers, left-handed pitchers of his era. This date in 1968, Brent Maine was born. And on this date in 1984, Embryo Burgos was born. And on the transaction front, the Mets traded Tim Foley and Greg Field to the Pittsburgh Pirates for Frank Tavares on this date. I always liked Frankie T. I could just picture his the bill of his baseball cap turned upwards. He was an exciting player to watch. Looking back at it, I was younger when I watched him play, but statistically, I don't think he was one of the better shortstops, but he was a fun watch. And Tim Foley was a bulldog. He was a great, great player. And he went on to the Pirates, and they won a championship that year, so everything worked out well for both parties. Okay, now it's time for our self-promoting PSA. If you're not a member of the baseball group New York Mets Baseball Way of Life, please do join. We have great content, great contributions, great Mets fans like you participating every day in the group, so check us out. You really won't be disappointed. And if you're listening to this podcast, by all means, please do subscribe to it. That way you'll be alerted every day when one is uploaded. Like this one, you would have been noted right away as soon as this one was up and loaded from your favorite carrier. And if you ever need to reach out to me, I'm at philstan41@gmail.com. Now what we like to do is go over and let you know what today's trivia and Jeopardy questions are. So who's ready? Who's got some pen and paper ready to write their responses to these great Jeopardy and trivia questions? Today's trivia question is, the Mets played their first playoff game in 11 years on October 5th, 1999 at Arizona. Who was the starting pitcher for the Mets in this memorable game? Today's Jeopardy clues, two clues as always, tied for the Mets lead in wins with 13 in 1999. and tied for the Mets' lead in games started with 32 in 1999. Write down your answers, lock them in, and let us know how you did. Now, what else is going on in the group? Well, I'm glad you asked. Today, we talked about 1968 on this date when Nolan Ryan makes quick work out of the Dodgers when he strikes out the side on 9 pitches in the top of the third inning of the Mets' 3-2 loss at Shea Stadium. The 21-year-old New York fireballer, who will accomplish the feat with the Angels in 72, strikes out 11 batters in 7.1 frames, including Claude Austin, Wes Parker, and Zolio Versailles, the victims of his immaculate inning. Yes, he really could bring it, couldn't he? Then on this date, we mentioned, as we did before, that the Mets traded Tim Foley and minor league prospect Greg Field to the Pirates for second baseman Frank Tavares. Foley appeared in 133 games, will play a significant role in the Pirates' championship that season, batting .291 and providing solid defense at shortstop for the Bucks. Then on this date in 1987, it was an historic day for the Met franchise as they played their 4,000th game in franchise history. Now, the Mets dropped a 4-2 decision to St. Louis at Busch Stadium, and the reigning world champs, who started as an expansion team in 62, have won exactly half of their last 1,000 games, posting a 500-498-2 record during the span that began on July 19, 1980. Then on this date in 1988, equaling their largest margin of victory when keeping opponents scoreless, the Mets routed Cincinnati 14-0 at Synergy Field 14-0. Outfielder Bernard Gilkey crosses the plate in the first, third, fifth, seventh, and eighth inning, becoming one of only 4 players in franchise history to score 5 runs in one game. And then on this date in 2005, we noted that David Wright's 7th inning grand slam at Philadelphia's Citizens Bank Park established a club record for home runs hit in a game. The Mets will go deep 7 times, Reyes twice, Diaz twice, Piazza, Wright, and Minkiewicz when they rout the Phillies 16-4. So the Mets had their big bats out that day, and Matt Harvey silenced some bats in 2013 when, according to the Ohio Sports Bureau, Matt Harvey became the first pitcher in modern Major League history to win his first 4 games while giving up less than 10 hits. The 24-year-old Mets right-hander easily outduels his mound opponent, Washington's former phenom Steven Strasburg, prompting the city crowd to start chanting, "Harvey's better, Harvey's better." How many of you guys remember that? Then we also remembered the Mets' big 9th inning against the Nationals in 2008 to come from behind and beat the Nationals. That was a big day. And as always, we have great contributions every day. We showed the 2 great catches of Tommy Agee, I should say, in the 69 World Series. And Mike Scott posted a great photo of Louis Gourmet without a beard, and we have to get used to that because Louis has shaved off his beard, and I had no idea he looked like that beardless. Pretty cool stuff. Louis's a fun guy. You got to love him. And we did notice Anthony Rivera reminded us all that we're going to get a doubleheader today. McGill and Scherzer are on the mound. And he talked about it in his latest podcast, Subway to Shea. So if you haven't checked out his podcast, check it out. And we gave this great statistic. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. Only 8 players in Major League Baseball history have recorded the following numbers in their first 10 seasons. 1,500 hits, 200 homers, and 150 stolen bases. Who are those great players? Frank Robinson, Bobby Bonds, Jeff Bagwell, Alex Rodriguez, Vladimir Guerrero, Ryan Braun, Andrew McCutchen, and David Wright. So David was really a great player, and we can't forget that. And like I said, we noted that the Mets starting rotation has a 1.07 ERA through 10 games. And we gave a salute to Diamond Vision. Who remembers Diamond Vision back in the day? Then we had pictures of the Mets' 1994 radio and TV network announcers. Cool stuff. We had a picture of Howie Rose, Bob Murphy, Gary Cohen. And it was good seeing those guys like almost 30 years ago, Howie and Gary. Still looked the same. Both had a little bit more hair, but didn't we all? And again, that's all the great stuff you'll see in the group every day. So do please check us out. Now it is Frank Viola's birthday, so let's reminisce about Frank's great career. Former Met 20 game winner, 1989 to 1991, he was with us. And he was our AA pitching coach from 2013 to 2018. Yes, Frank John Viola Jr., known as Sweet Music, was born on April 19, 1960 in East Meadow, Long Island. The local Italian boy made good and came home to pitch in the late 1980s. The 6'4" left-hander went to East Meadow High School and became a local baseball star. He then moved on to St. John's University, where he was a teammate of another Italian-American future Met, John Franco. Franco was already a team star, another local boy from Brooklyn, and Viola was anxious to meet him when he arrived. Viola soon became the St. John's star pitcher, too. He was actually drafted during his senior year by the Kansas City Royals, but did not sign. 1980, he pitched for Team USA in the Amateur World Series, and they came in fourth place. 1981, he went up against Yale University and its star pitcher, future Met Ron Darling, which is now considered one of the greatest classic pitchers duels in college baseball history. The two pitchers both tossed 11 shutout innings before St. John's Redmen won it in the 12th inning. Viola would officially sign with the Minnesota Twins after being selected in the second round of the 1981 amateur draft. Viola debuted in 1982 at Minnesota, but posted losing records in his first two seasons. He was 4-10 in his rookie year, and then 7-15 the next year for the fifth-place Twins, while allowing the most earned runs in the American League, 128. But then in 1984, his whole career turned around. Now here's a little trivia question. Viola would become known as Sweet Music in the Twin Cities after a writer claimed it sounded like Sweet at the Metrodome Music when Viola pitched. A fan soon hung a banner at the Dome and the name stuck. The banner is now part of the Minnesota Historical Society. Now, of course, we all know that Viola would throw one of the best changeups of his era. In 1984, he won 18 games, going 18-12, fourth most in the American League, posting a 3.21 ERA, which was 10th best in the American League. He pitched 257 innings, striking out 149 batters, and he followed that up with another 18-win season, 18-14, which was third best in the AL, pitching 250 innings, striking out 135 batters, and posting a 4.09 ERA. He would win 16 more games, five straight seasons, while pitching over 245 innings six straight times. So you can see he had durability, he had the arm, and he would pile up the wins for you. In 1985, he went into history books, giving up Rod Carew's 3,000th hit. 1987, he led the twin staff going 17-10, posting the league's best ERA at 2.90. He struck out 197 batters, 7th in the AL, pitching 251 innings, 10th in the AL. That year, manager Jim Kelly and his twins were surprised everyone by winning the World Series. Now, in the 87 ALCS against Detroit, Viola got the Game 1 start against Doyle Alexander. He allowed 5 runs over 8 innings, but had no decision. Twins eventually won the game, scoring 4 runs in the 8th inning. He returned to get the win in Game 4 of the Detroit game, although he only lasted 5 innings, giving up 3 runs and 4 walks. But Viola earned national attention as he started in the World Series against the Cardinals. He would pitch in 3 games, going 2-1 with a 3.72 ERA in 19 innings pitched. In Game 1, Minnesota, Viola rolled to a 10-1 win. He struck out 5, allowing just 5 hits over 8 innings. He had a rough Game 4, taking the loss after allowing 5 runs in 3 1/3 innings at Busch Stadium. He was the Game 7 hero, pitching 8 innings, allowing only 2 runs on 6 hits, striking out 7 Cardinals in the Wild Metrodome. The Twins took the lead in the 6th inning on a Greg Gagne RBI single and topped off the 4-2 win on a Dan Gladden double in the 8th. Viola earned the World Series MVP honors. Can't get any better than that. And he followed up his MVP World Series performance by winning the 88 AL Cy Young Award. He led the league in wins, going 24-7 with a 2.46 ERA, which was second in the American League. He struck out 193 batters, third in the AL, walked only 54 in 255 innings pitched, which was sixth in the AL, and in 36 starts, he did all this, which was third in the AL as far as starts was concerned. He threw 7 complete games for his fourth straight season and tossed a pair of shutouts. This season, he made the first of three All-Star appearances. Now, in 89, he fell off to an 8-12 record by late July. On the 1989 trade deadline, he came home as he was sent to the Mets in a blockbuster trade. Viola arrived in exchange for pitchers Rick Aguilera, David West, and Kevin Tappany. His arrival at Shea Stadium came with high expectations as he joined the star-studded staff of Dwight Gooden, Ron Darling, David Cohn, Sid Fernandez, and Bobby Ojeda. That is quite a staff. People forget the Mets had all those guys at one time. Now, Viola debuted with the Mets on August 2nd in St. Louis and went out and beat the Cardinals 4-3, pitching 8 innings, allowing 2 runs on 4 hits. He then took a no decision in Philadelphia after allowing just 1 run in 7 innings. He debuted at Shea, and unfortunately his debut resulted in a loss, and he then took 3 straight losing decisions. On August 28th, he tossed a 3-hit shutout in L.A., outdoing Oral Hershiser and Dodgers 1-0 in a classic, as Hojo drove in the game's only run. In September, he went 3-2, closing out the season with a 6-2 complete victory over the Pirates in Pittsburgh. Now, the Mets fell 6 games to first place, and the Cubs won the division that year. And once again, the Mets missed the playoffs. Viola himself went 5-5 since coming to the Mets, adjusting to the changes. No one on the Mets staff had more than 14 wins. Overall on the season, Viola was 13-17 with a career-high 211 strikeouts. So 89 was a disappointment for the Mets. But in 1990, Frankie V would have the season he was brought to New York for. He started out with a 3-0 win over the Pirates in the second game of the season at Shea. He started pretty well, winning his first 7 starts going into May. On May 2nd, he threw a 6-hit shutout against the eventual world champion Reds. 2 starts later, he blanked the Dodgers on a 4-hitter at Shea Stadium. After taking his first 2 losses, he went on to win another 6 of 7 games, including a 4-game win streak into July. In 2 wins of that stretch, he threw complete games, topped off by a 5-hit shutout of the Houston Astros at Shea. In a 3-game stretch, he allowed just 3 earned runs over 26 innings. The All-Star break, he was 13-4 with a 2.39 ERA, and he was elected to the All-Star team. But Bob Welch got the start. Bob Welch was with the Dodgers that year. Viola pitched a scoreless 5th inning in the NL's 2-0 shutout in the game played at Wrigley Field in Chicago. And after the break, Frankie V struggled, going 7-8 on the final day of the season. He beat the Pirates in Pittsburgh for his 20th win of the year. Viola became the 5th Met pitcher in team history to win 20 games, a feat that would not be accomplished again until 22 years later in 2012 when Dickey won his 20th. Overall, Viola had a great year, leading the Mets staff in most categories, winning 20 games, going 20-12. That was the second most wins in the National League that year, and he led the league in starts with 35 as well as innings pitched. He came in 3rd place for the Cy Young Award as the Mets finished 2nd. Again, even though they won 91 games, 4 games behind the Pirates. That season, Dwight Gooden had won 19 games and David Cohn 14 games for the strong Mets staff. Now, 1991 started out great for everyone. The Mets were in contention early on as Viola got off to a 6-2 start by the end of May. He won 11 of his first 16 decisions, posting a 2.34 ERA. He made the last of his 3 All-Star appearances, pitching the 5th inning of a 4-2 NL loss at Sky Dome. After that, everything fell apart. The Mets would end up in 5th place, losing 91 games, their worst showing in 9 seasons. Viola would only win 2 more games after the All-Star break while losing 10 more times. He allowed the most hits, 259, runs, 112, homers, 25 on the staff. He ended the season at 13-15, giving up the most hits by any NL pitcher while posting a 3.97 ERA. Viola was granted free agency and left New York to sign with the Boston Red Sox. In his Mets career, he went 39-32 over parts of 3 seasons. He posted a 3.31 ERA with 387 strikeouts and 82 games pitched. In Boston in 92, he won 13 games, 13-11 with 3.44 ERA, and he won 11 games the next year, 11-8 with a 3.14 ERA, but he really never regained his Cy Young form. In spring training of 1993, he threw a combined no-hitter with Corey Bailey against the Philadelphia Phillies. He then had arm trouble, which led to Tommy John surgery in 93. He returned to have two brief stints with the Reds in 95, pitching three games in the major league level. In 96, he signed with the Toronto Blue Jays, going 1-3 in six starts, before retiring at age 36 in 1996. For his career, Frankie V pitched in 15 seasons, making three All-Star teams, won an AL Cy Young Award, and made one postseason. He made 420 starts, which is 111th all-time, going 176, 150, 172nd most wins all-time with a 3.73 ERA. He pitched 2,836 innings, 165th all-time, with 1,844 strikeouts, 108th all-time. He tossed 16 shutouts with 74 complete games. In his career, he allowed 2,827 hits, 2,227 hits, with 864 walks, 185th all-time, and 294 homers, 64th all-time. Now, Frankie V first coached baseball in Orlando, Florida, and coached his daughters at schools in East Meadow, Long Island. In 2009, he worked at the Cleveland Indians spring training camp and did some broadcasting for the Red Sox on NESN. 2011, he was back in the Met organization as pitching coach for the Brooklyn Cyclones. He spent 2012-2013 with the Mets affiliate Savannah Sand Nats. 2013, he was promoted to AAA level as pitching coach for the Las Vegas team and joined the Mets at spring training. He was a tutor to the Mets' top minor league prospects, Noah Syndergaard and Jacob DeGrom, who would be the 2014 NL Rookie of the Year and win two Cy Youngs, did Jacob DeGrom. Now, during a medical exam, a heart problem was detected that required surgery. On April 1st, Viola underwent successful heart surgery. Met GM General Manager Samuel Olsen said, "I did talk to Frank yesterday. He certainly wants to be back, but I think we'll let the doctors dictate exactly when he comes back. When he's ready and able, I'm sure he'll be out there, but we want to make sure he's fully recovered from his surgery first." Now, Viola began to feel better and yearns to get back to work coaching at Vegas. He returned to work in June, coaching his fine pitching staff consisting of two future stars, Syndergaard and Familia. And Viola went with the Mets at spring training in 2015 and returned as the 51's pitching coach. That year, he saw Syndergaard and the newest Mets star pitching prospect Steve Matz both break into the major leagues and get to a World Series. And Viola became a first-time grandfather. He said, "He enjoys things a lot more than I did before. Believe it or not, my wife might argue this one, but I have a lot more optimism in my life than I did before. I just realized how fortunate I was and how I really love doing what I'm doing. When you know what you're going through, a life or death thing, and your first thought is, 'God, I'm going to miss these kids. I know I'm doing something because I love doing it.'" As a projection for the 2016 season, Viola told WFAN radio host Steve Summers, "As long as our pitching staff remains healthy and we get a healthy Zach Wheeler back sometime in 2016, it's going to be fun to watch these kids grow up. One's going to try topping the other, and they're going to have friendly competition. They're going to have everything positive for them. This could be, and I was there in 69 when the Mets put a pretty good rotation together with Seaver, Kuzman, Matlack, Gentry, and all that for the World Series. I think this one in 2016 can match any rotation the Mets have ever put out there. That's how much confidence and ability I think they possess." After many changes in the Mets' farm system following the 2017 season, Viola swapped spots with Glenn Abbott as pitching coach. Viola's pitching coach at AA Binghamton in 2018. Now, in 2019, Frankie V parted ways with the Mets organization and became a pitching coach in the Independent League in North Carolina. Viola is very outspoken against many of the experimental new rules in the Atlantic Baseball League. He feels unfair for young players to have to be subjected to rules that will never be implemented in major leagues due to the players' union. In 2019, Viola became the first person to ever get ejected for arguing with a robot umpire, which was being worn by the human umpire behind home plate. In 2020, he is the High Point Rockers bench coach. Frank and his wife, Kathy, have been married since the mid-80s, and they have three children. His daughter, Brittany Viola, is a pro diver in Miami and was a two-time NCAA champion and was a member of the 2012 USA Olympic team. 2009, she won second place in diving at the U.S. Grand Prix in Fort Lauderdale. 2011, Viola captured the Senior Women's Platform Championship in Los Angeles, and in 2014, she gave Frank his first grandchild. His other daughter, Kelly, played volleyball at Winthrop University and is now a college volleyball coach. His son, Frank Viola III, started pitching in Chicago White Sox organization in 2004, but Tommy John surgery set his career back. One day, sitting around with his dad and other Twins legend Tony Oliva, Rod Carew, and Ken Herbeck, they were talking about how hard it was to hit a knuckleballer like Hoyt Wilhelm. Oliva suggested Viola III learn to throw one. He worked on the knuckleball with the help of R.A. Dickey and Tim Wakefield, whom we met through Sox broadcaster Hawk Harrelson, revive his career. 2014, he returned to pitch in the Toronto organization, but was released in late July. 2015, he signed with the White Sox and retired at the end of the year. Now let's talk about the career of former Met Brett Maine. Did you know that Brett Maine was an All-American at Cal State Fullerton and inducted to the Orange Coast College Hall of Fame in 2006? And he was drafted in the first round of the 1989 MLB Draft, 13th overall. He was a major league catcher from 1990 to 2004, and he played most of his career with the Kansas City Royals, but he also spent some time with our beloved Metsies, the A's, the Giants, Rockies, and Diamondbacks. He ranked 75th in the history of baseball, 1,143 pro games caught, and held the distinction of being the only catcher in the 20th century to have won a game as a pitcher until Cubs backup catcher John Baker won a game as a relief pitcher on July 29, 1994. Throughout his career, the well-traveled Maine was an effective catcher and an excellent pitcher. He was an excellent handling catcher of pitchers. He's a pretty decent hitter. He had occasional power and compiled a career-high .301 batting average in consecutive seasons. In retirement, Maine has gone on to serve on the board of directors at Braille Institute and Center for Hope and Healing, and he's also the author of a book called The Art of Catching and creator of a website and blog, www.brentmaine.com. And as a Royal, he caught Brett Saberhagen's no-hitter on August 26, 1991. On August 22, 2000, the Colorado Rockies sent Maine in as a relief pitcher in the 12th inning against the Atlanta Braves. Now, Maine, the Rockies' regular catcher, was unable to swing a bat due to a sprained left wrist and had missed the previous four games. Out of pitchers, manager Buddy Bell asked Maine if he could pitch. Maine, who later said he had never pitched at any level, responded, "Yeah, I can pitch." He pitched one inning, surrendering no runs with a fastball that topped out at 83 miles per hour. Colorado won the game in the bottom of the 12th inning when rookie Adam Melhouse pinch-hitting for Maine single with the bases loaded and two outs. Maine thus became the first position player to be credited with the win since Rocky Colavito in 1968 and the last to do so until Wilson Valdez in 2011. All told, in the 15-year career, Maine was a .263 hitter with 38 home runs and 403 RBIs in 1,279 games. Now, with the Mets, Brent Maine was with us 1 year, 1996. He played in 70 games, had 113 at-bats, and he batted .263, with an OBP of .342 and a slugging percentage of .354 for an OPS of .696, and his OPS plus was 89. So there you go, Brent Maine. Now let's look back at the career of Ambrio Burgos. 2005, Burgos made his major league debut with the Kansas City Royals and appeared in 59 games as a relief pitcher. Despite pitching only 60 innings, he managed to be 10th in the league in wild pitches. Go figure. 2006, Burgos had the highest average fastball velocity of American League relievers at 96.5 miles per hour. So he could bring it, and he posted an ERA of 3.95. Now, in 2006, Burgos started the season as the Royals' closer. However, the season was a disappointment as he finished with a record of 4-5 and a 5.52 ERA in 73 and a third innings pitched. He had 18 saves, but also blew 12 saves and lost the closer's job midway through the season. On December 5, 2006, Burgos was traded by the Royals to the Mets for starting pitcher Brian Bannister. In 2007, Burgos began the season on the Mets' 25-man roster, but was sent to AAA soon thereafter. According to an Associated Press report on August 28, 2007, General Manager Omar Minaya indicated that Burgos underwent Tommy John surgery and would be out for a prolonged period. On August 6, 2008, Burgos pitched 9 batters in his first minor league rehab game. On December 12, 2008, the Mets did not offer Burgos a new contract and he became a free agent. So with the Mets in 2007, Burgos was 1-0. He appeared in 17 games, all in relief, finished 5 of them, and had an ERA of 3.42. That was basically the end of his major league career after his stint with the Mets in 2007. Now, before we end this podcast, we must, as we always do, give you the answers to our Jeopardy and Trivia question of the day. So let's see how you did. Who is ready? Okay, good. The trivia question once again was, who was the starting pitcher for the Mets in the memorable game of October 5th, 1999, which was the Mets' first playoff game in 11 years, and they were playing the Diamondbacks in Arizona? Well, the correct answer to that trivia question is Masato Yoshi. Congrats to Dave Phillip on being the first to submit the correct answer. And our two Jeopardy clues, tied for the Mets lead in wins with 13 in 1999 and tied for the Mets lead in games started with 32 in 1999. The correct response to yesterday's Mets final Jeopardy is, who is Earl Hershiser? Congrats to our good friend John Tierney on being the first to submit the correct answer. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today. Don't forget, there's a big twin bill at Citi Field today. The first game is going to feature Alex Cobb against Tyler McGill. What a great matchup. Both are undefeated so far this year. Cobb 1-0 with a 3.60 ERA, 10 Ks. Tyler McGill 2-0, 0.00 ERA. Sounds like my grade point average, with 11 strikeouts so far. And then the nightcap is going to be a doozy. Logan Webb, 1-0 with a 1.29 ERA and 10 Ks against Mighty Max Scherzer, 2-0 with a 3.27 ERA and 13 Ks. Should be fun. Check it out, and we'll be back here tomorrow to talk all about it. Enjoy the day. The weather's gotten better. And what's even better is all you folks listening. I really do appreciate it. So check in again tomorrow, and we'll be back to talk more Bet Baseball. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the doubleheader, and we'll talk soon.
And now for your nice ladies and gentlemen out there who don't understand the Italian language, I'd like to do two choruses in British. Lazy Mary, you better get up. She answered back, I am not evil. Lazy Mary, you better get up. We need the sheets for the table. Lazy Mary, you smoke in bed. There's only one man you should marry. My advice to you would be is to pay attention to me. assemble our boom boom mana there. Sitchin' up la banda see the boom party of a good son here. La la la, they should hit the pakala. Way boom ba, boom in a jajakata. Gamme voglio mare da, c'ho un malavaglio, gamme voglio mare da.